So it got up at 8:23, and it would go down in 22 minutes' time, officially. 3:58. Whenever we get to the winter solstice, I think of my brother-in-law, who lives in Norway. And in Norway, where he lives, the sun would get up this morning at 9:28 and set at 20:04, so about an hour's less sunshine over there than we get. And he only lives, well, he lives in the southern part of Norway, which is about level with kind of Aberdeen, something like that. So if you go up to the top of Norway, you get into the Arctic Circle, and as soon as you hit the Arctic Circle today, there would be no light at all. It would be permanent dark. Many ancient cultures in the northern half of the world recognised and celebrated the winter solstice. They did it, I think, largely because they were anticipating what was to come. They knew that the days were going to get longer. It was the return, if you like, of light. And that was smashing. That was worth celebrating. And perhaps it's not surprising that then that when Christianity was adopted as the official religion of the Roman Empire, all the way back in the 4th century, a dodgy pagan solstice festival was recast to something, I'll just say, was a lot more pleasant. But when we come to the Bible, when we come to the birth of Jesus, those themes of darkness and light are really common. They're a perfect fit. You know, often we interpret life in terms of darkness and light, and it makes its way into great themes like Star Wars here. That epic battle, really, between good and evil, darkness and light, or the dark and the light side of the force, as they call it. It's loosely based, Star Wars, on Eastern philosophies, like Buddhism, where the concept is of light and dark always cancelling each other out. They're in balance, but they cancel each other out. And so if light is good and dark is evil and they cancel each other out, actually I find that a bit depressing. Because light never wins, actually, does it? You always get the dark. But in the Bible we see a different story. The first thing that God does in the Bible is to create light for a world that's described as empty and formless and dark. It's the beginning of time, the beginning of history. The dark losing ground straight away. The power of light. So in the Bible, light and dark mean far more than good and evil. We're talking about meaning versus meaninglessness. We're talking about life versus emptiness. We're talking about with God rather than without God. And so this nativity story that we're hearing today, it's not a myth that's developed out of some kind of observance of the stars and the motions of the world. It's personal, first-hand accounts placed squarely into history. It's the story, if you like, of God's invasion of darkness and victory over it with light. Amen. Much as you might say it was in the beginning. So I'm going to read, and you'll find inside your order of service, I guess we'll call it, some of the words that I'm going to read now. And they come from the start of John's Gospel. John, one of Jesus' closest friends. John writes this. He says, "In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. John is saying that before the birth of Jesus, there was light and there was life. It was part of creation. We've talked about that, we've seen that. But here's something that happens that's very special. Then that life and light, it came through, it was part of the identity of this person he calls the Word. And as you read on through John, you discover that this is simply a term that he uses here, right at the beginning of his book. For Jesus. For Jesus before Jesus is born. He calls him the Word. He says the Word, that's Jesus then, was with God and was God way before Bethlehem. Everything that is, he says, was created by and through him. So that would include you and me. But a bit like how at night we look up and we see the stars in the sky and, you know, they're out there and we're down here and there's miles and miles between us. So we were separated from the full light and life that was in the Word. Because the Word was with God. The light shone, but we were in the dark. A disturbingly long time ago for me now, when I was a student, I used to walk between where I lived in halls of residence in Bristol and into town, into the university, into to where my church was. And every time I did that, I had to walk across an area called the Downs. And for some reason, I don't really know why, Bristol City Council never saw fit to put street lamps along about 300 yards of that. So for 300 yards, it was basically pitch black. It was dark, so dark in fact, that one time I hit my head on a road sign while I was walking down the pavement. You know, when I used to walk that stretch, I always felt my pulse quicken. My pace would quicken. It probably would for you as well. I never liked it. I wanted to be back among the streetlights on a cold winter's night. I wanted to be back in my nice, warm, bright room in the halls of residence. That's what I wanted. There's something unnerving about being in the dark. In the UK today, it's quite unfashionable to believe in God. It's quite unfashionable to come to a place like this. You might call it intellectual suicide. Because after all, hasn't science shed so much light on the world? On existence? And yet what I find really odd right now is the way that our criticism as a culture of existence is causing what you might call an existential crisis. People aren't sure why they're here or what they're doing. Now, at best, I think what science has taught us is wonderful insights into the mechanics of the universe. Whether on a huge planetary type scale or whether on a minute cellular level. That's at best. At worst, when theory gets masqueraded as fact, when we're taught things as fact that are just theory. So I don't have a problem with science, but I do have a problem with poor science. And poor science has undermined personal meaning and value. That's what I see when I look at what's going on in the news, when they talk about people with mental health issues and so on. So if for you, you've ever looked in a mirror and wondered what the point of life is, a world without God? Well, that provides no answers. We are in the dark. But here's the great thing. Listen to this. This is how John goes on. I've just picked out a few verses just to help us focus on the one thing. He says, the one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. So the Word became human. That's Christmas. And made his home amongst us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we've seen his glory. The glory of the Father's one and only Son. No one's ever seen God, John says, but the unique one, and he's talking about Jesus, who is himself God, is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us. We could have remained in the darkness for good. We could have done. But John says that this light came into the world. Came into our world of darkness. The one who is the true light. He describes him as the Word that became human. And so in Jesus, this distant, this unreachable God becomes close and relatable. No one's ever seen God, John says. You know, theorise as much as you like. You could all do that till the cows come home. We're in the dark. What we need is for God to show himself to us. That's what we need. And so Jesus does that. We're not talking about human intuition here. We're talking about divine revelation of glory. And the glory Jesus reveals, John says that's God's unfailing love and faithfulness. I'm going to let you into a little secret. I hope this is okay me telling this story. I'm looking at Helen, my wife. It's about when Helen and I got engaged. I'm sure Helen remembers. Very clearly. But you see, we'd been out to dinner and we were walking home from a pub, the one that did serve food, past one that didn't serve food, and I'd had it in my head this would be a great evening to pop the question. So I led Helen to sit down on one of the benches in this pub garden and I got out the ring. It was a beautiful moment. Apart from the fact it was pitch black, Helen had no idea what I was doing and could not see the ring. That's true, isn't it? Yes. Thankfully, she still said yes. But she had to wait till we got back to the hotel before she could actually see what this ring that I gave her looked like. You know, the coming of Jesus into the world means two things. First, it means we're no longer in the dark about God, about who he is. It also means we're not in the dark about ourselves. See, you know who you are when you know who God is. Because you know how you fit into the world. Jesus, the light, reveals the beauty of God's love for you like the light shows up the colour and beauty of a diamond in a diamond ring. So in Jesus we see God's unfailing love and faithfulness to me and to you. That's what we see. God was not content for us to remain in the dark. He didn't want us to stay in the dark. He wants you to know him. He wants you to know his love for you. You know, later on in his book, John records Jesus as saying these words. Excuse me. Saying these words. He says, I'm the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you'll have the light that leads to life. There's Jesus saying, I am the light of the world. That's quite a big thing to say. If I said it, you thought I was crazy. I am the light of the world. Who do I think I am? But John is saying that Jesus is saying himself that he is the light of the world. come to lead us into fullness of life. We don't have to walk in darkness anymore. We have the light of truth. Life on earth is not meaningless circles of some kind of wheel of fortune. It's one directional. We're here because of and for the sake of the love of God. Our lives find meaning in the one who made us. The question is, was Jesus right when he said that? We might ask the simple question, well, did he say the kinds of things that God would say? Did he do the kinds of things that God would do? When I look at his teaching and his miracles and his compassion and his integrity and his devotion, I think yes. But the religious and the ruling authorities didn't like what Jesus said or did. So they crucified him. Because dead men tell no tales. But you see then, even in death, in the darkest, greatest unknown that there is to us, the light still shone. Jesus rose to life. Jesus rose to life. He conquered death, much to the surprise of his dim-witted disciples. The darkness can never extinguish the light. That's what John said in his introduction. He was there. He saw Jesus in the flesh. He saw Jesus' risen glory with his own eyes. Isn't that brilliant? You've been out Christmas shopping, I'm sure. Yeah? You've braved queues and cold weather and driving wind and rain. Yeah. You could do it all from the comfort of your chair, can't you? We do that quite a lot, actually. We get it delivered to home, or maybe you can save on delivery costs by doing click and collect. Do you ever do click and collect? Those of you that are on the net.
Yeah.
It's very helpful. The other night, Helen and I watched this comedy on the BBC. I don't know if you watched that. I thought it was really funny. Helen and I were laughing out loud at it, weren't we? We loved it. The basic idea that the dad, who's the guy on the right there, he drives from London to Carlisle to find the last remaining toy that his daughter must have for Christmas Day on Christmas Eve.
Of course.
It's that kind of comedy epic journey. It's really good. You can find it on iPlayer. Go and enjoy that. We'll definitely put you in the Christmas mood. And one of the mantras in the show was, nothing's too much. Nothing, surely nothing is too much for your daughter, the guy on the right would say to him. I don't know how many of us would do that. Drive all the way to Carlisle. From here, a couple of hours, three maybe. But we like things made easy, don't we? We like things on a plate. Little effort as possible. Just click. And it's there, it's delivered to your door. Now here's the amazing thing. In Jesus, God turns up and says, it's me, I'm here. He does the hard work, if you like. He becomes human. He is the one who gets crucified. So when it comes to this question of, well, is Jesus right when he says he's the light of the world? You know, for some of you, you would say, yeah. No question. For some of you, maybe. For others of you, nah. But we kind of had two choices, don't we? We can either stay in the dark, or we can follow him into the light. Staying in the dark means exactly that. It means not knowing. It means staying in the dark, being in the dark. But if you're going to concentrate on science and stick to your science, you're going to be, you know, a random collection of molecules assembled by chance. That doesn't do a lot for me. But choosing to follow Jesus into the light, it takes you out of the dark. It enables you to say, I am loved by God. I have life with God. I have hope in God. You know that Jesus has conquered even the darkness of death. Even there's light for you. And on one level, saying, choosing to follow Jesus is the easiest thing in the world. It's click and collect. You say a simple prayer, something like, you know, Jesus, I've been stumbling around in the dark. Please show me that you're the light of the world. Amen. So if that's where you're at tonight, that's all you need to do. If you're not sure, that's okay. But isn't it worth putting a little bit of effort into finding out whether Jesus was speaking the truth or not? That dad driving from London to Carlisle for a toy, for goodness sake. If you know that you're in the dark, isn't the possibility of light and life worth pursuing? I might be biased, but I think so. So why not talk to somebody, perhaps who's part of the church here? Maybe somebody who's taken part tonight. Maybe somebody that you came with. Maybe somebody sitting near you. Can come and talk to me. What I want to invite you to do is to take one of these Why Christmases with you. Short little book, just speaks more about why Jesus came into the world. So you might find that really helpful. So do take that with you. Please. And in the new year, I'm hoping to